This week, Bloomberg reported that NVIDIA is preparing to walk away from its $40 billion purchase of ARM due to the FTC's intent to stop the merger. The merger would have created a semiconductor powerhouse to compete with the likes of Intel, Qualcomm, Samsung, and yes, Apple. I'm Jason Cipriani with my co-host Jason Perlow, and on this episode of Jason Squared, we're going to discuss the future of ARM in desktop computing. Or is this simply an Apple-only world? All right, Perlow, let me just state this right off the bat. Semiconductors, I understand it, but the finer process and the landscape or whatever is not my forte. I am not a semiconductor guru, so to speak. But this doesn't look good for ARM and the future of its place in the desktop. Or what do you think?
Well, you know, Jason, let's get, you know, reality orientation here, right? You know, Apple is so far ahead of the other companies when it comes to putting a desktop platform on ARM that it's like not even funny anymore. Look, the M1, right, has now been effectively deployed across the entire Mac product line, with the exception of, you know, a few models like Mac Pro. And we know that's coming very shortly, you know, including the first major chip revision in the form of M2, right? So now we've gone well over a year plus. I think we're going close to 2 years with M1 now, right? So the M1 Pro and the M1 Max, which recently were revised for the new MacBooks, right? They're no slouches, right? You know, no. I have been using one on a MacBook Pro for, I'm going to say, about a week and a half now. Let me tell you, there's no way in hell I am going back to an Intel machine after experiencing performance like this. There's just no way.
Yeah, it's not even an option.
You're going to need to rip it out of my hands.
Right.
Period. You know.
Yeah. I feel the same way about my M1 MacBook Pro. And I did review the M1 Pro MacBook Pro, which is the most confusing thing to say and write multiple times in a review. And that thing is speedy and just utterly impressive for
it's
this
insane.
Early on
in
Apple's life cycle of desktop processors. But now, Let's back up here a minute. Apple's not the only one that has an operating system that runs on ARM, at least when it comes to computing. You know, Windows runs on ARM, Windows 11, Windows 10. Yeah. There's a Surface Pro X. There's, you know, been a few generations of, although there's only been two generations of the ARM processor. And it's gotten a lot better. They still don't have full 64-bit emulation, but it's gotten a lot closer to working across the board.
Yeah, I mean, you know, admittedly, Qualcomm, you know, is making progress with Microsoft with the SQ series chips, right? And Microsoft has made Windows 11 run better on the Surface Pro X. Is it 10 or Surface Pro X? I don't know what they call it.
It's X.
The X. But, you know, we can't compare at all what those two are getting have done getting Windows working acceptably on a single product. You know, versus what, you know, Apple's done to make Apple Silicon work across its entire product line. Never mind also the iPad, the iPhone, the watch and TV, all of it. And who knows what the hell else they're working on, right? So, I mean, Surface Pro X is a single device. But what about the entire PC industry, right? So we have HP, Dell, Lenovo, Asus, Acer, and Samsung. The first three companies on that list alone occupy a 64% share of the personal computer market, whereas Apple's is a whole 7.6%.
I mean, yeah, so are we looking at this wrong with Apple's success in going to ARM because they are such a small share of the Windows market? I mean, those are huge numbers to compare Apple to.
So, yeah, the numbers are small, right? If you compare it to the PC market overall, right, it's only slightly larger than Acer's, which is 7.2%, right? So here's the thing, and here's the difference where what I think is important. A few years ago, if we were to make this observation, the numbers would look fairly similar in terms of Mac market share, right? But there's a difference today, right? All of us are now saying, oh my God, look what they pulled off. Yeah. ARM is real. ARM is powerful. The x86 cannot top this thing on performance and power consumption, right? You know, a few years ago, we had a completely different narrative, right? You know, so you know, Macs are overpriced. Macs aren't as are not as fast as PCs. Blah 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 blah. So the Mac share is still relatively small, yeah. But now we see it has enormous potential in terms of this ARM thing. The power of the product is unassailable. It's right in front of us. We're using it right now to do this podcast, right? So back then, before Apple announced Apple Silicon as their future platform, the very idea of using ARM chips as PCs was considered this theoretical borderline science fiction thing, right? I mean, we're only talking 3 or 4 years ago tops. It was certainly rumored that Apple was working on it. It hadn't really been put into practice unless you were like an engineer at a company like Microsoft or Qualcomm, right? When I was at Microsoft, I knew they were working on this stuff. I saw demos, right? Yeah. And you know, I knew that in a lab, Windows desktops ran okay. The OS had been ported. The performance wasn't great. And within a few years of work and a couple of $1 billion of development, we might be able to replace the x86 down the road with a different chip, right? You know, we knew Windows ran okay headless as a server operating system on top of, you know, on a chip in the data center with special Azure workloads on them, right? That the customers didn't know about. They just, you know, they went to Azure, they hit a button, they had an app or a workload, and maybe it might have ran on an ARM because, you know, whether it's a database or something, you know, or a service layer, you know, Microsoft put something on it and it just ran. Nobody knew about it, right? Yeah. But as a typical business PC user was concerned, it was years from being real.
Yeah, and what makes this such a big deal, just for listeners who aren't aware, ARM processors have, as Apple has proven, are better performing, have better battery life, more power efficient. But in order to switch from Intel to ARM, the entire architecture of apps, just speaking about apps, there's a lot more to this than that, has to be redone. Apps aren't wrote with the underlying frameworks to run on ARM processors because Intel has controlled everything over the years. And for that matter, AMD as well. So it's a huge switch and it's a huge undertaking in order to transition to the new framework that ARM relies on. But Apple's silicon chip is the real deal. We know this because, like we've already said, you and I have been using them for over a year now. Yep. And they're close. They said Apple, when they announced Apple Silicon, they would transition their entire lineup over 2 years. That two-year mark is near the end of this year, so we have a little bit of time left. But according to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, who has solid resources and solid sources within Apple or somewhere, says that the transition will be done by the end of the year, and there's even rumors that we'll see a new Mac Pro, the M2 chip, like you were just talking about, by the end of the year. So, like I was saying, it's not like Windows 11 doesn't work on ARM. It, you know, it runs pretty decently on the Surface Pro X, but you're telling me that if you run Windows 11 in Parallels on a Mac, it flies like that?
It does fly.
And I know you didn't say this. This is in our notes, by the way. You're telling me.
It is very fast. It's extremely fast. I mean, because the chip is that much faster than what Microsoft is using on their own hardware. It's so like, it, you know, the situation is weird. It's almost exactly like the Tesla versus everyone else making EV cars and trying to put out EV charger situation, right? So like maybe Tesla is a small percentage of the entire automotive market as a whole, right? And the rest of the world is using combustion engines, right? And so for like, you know, we know Tesla has proven the technology that EV is awesome, but it's much more difficult for the rest of the industry to retool it and make EVs and chargers because of the massive size of the rest of the industry. So Apple is exactly the same way. They have a relatively small share of the marketplace, but they have made it work for their ecosystem. So, you know, as you said, the developers on Windows would have to, you know, they'd have to recompile all those apps. And that's something they have the tool sets, they exist. It can be done. And, you know,
Windows, but it's a lot of resources and a lot of time.
Yeah, it's a lot of resources and a lot of time. So the emulation software would have to work well. Now, we've proven that the emulation works fine on a Mac. Rosetta is an x86 emulation platform for 64-bit on the Mac. And, you know, there's several applications I'm running on my desktop right now. That, I mean, Audacity, the damn thing that I'm using to record this podcast, is a 30 is I think it's a 64-bit x86 application, and I don't know if Audacity has any plans to make a native version of Audacity. You know, that they plan to put in the App Store. They might not.
Yeah, Dropbox still hasn't. I mean, we're over a year into this, and they still haven't. They just released their beta version of a native Apple Silicon version of their app. And, you know, I don't know how many, I don't use Dropbox anymore. I quit using them a long time ago, but, you know, OneDrive apps like that, I don't believe are converted as well. And I'm using them. They work just fine.
Facebook Messenger, I think is still Intel. I still think Signal is still Intel. There's a bunch of things I'm using. I'm pretty sure. I can't really tell the difference. Once it's running, it's fine.
First launch of a program
is
a little slow because it has to recompile it, right? Rosetta 2 has to recompile the app and convert it over so it can emulate it. But after that initial launch, there's zero difference.
And actually, you know, the Mac doesn't ship with Rosetta in the OS by default, like literally the first time
it requires it,
right? Like almost everything that you want to use requires it. And then it asks you, do you want us to download this from the App Store? And it does download. And then you can start downloading the apps that are dependent on it, which I thought was weird, but whatever.
So I think as far as Microsoft is concerned here, the biggest competition chip that they have to Apple's M1 lineup is the SQ2, which is currently in the Microsoft Pro X. So it's considered their fastest ARM-based processor for Windows desktop. But it's nowhere close to being fast or as performance driven as the M1, just the basic M1, forget the Pro or the Max. It's just the basic M1. My Surface Pro X, depending on what I'm doing, is very sluggish at times. What do you know about the SQ series?
Well, not a ton, other than on paper than what Microsoft says in terms of it has in terms of cores and an equivalent processing power. Microsoft has an exclusive on SQ.
They're developing it with Qualcomm. It's a partnership between the two of them.
Yeah, it is, and there is no indication as to whether or not this will ever be licensed out to other PC manufacturers, right? You know, who knows? Microsoft may decide to keep this as their own, just like Apple Silicon as a competitive advantage, right? But the other PC players are playing with ARM, but they're nowhere near as serious about it as Microsoft is. And I would say that, in terms of seriousness, Microsoft is not anywhere close to serious as Apple, right? But so HP is sort of testing the waters with their Spectre Ultrabook that competes with the Surface Pro X that uses a Qualcomm Snapdragon 7C Generation 2, which is I don't really know how that compares with the SQ2, but that thing is no match for the M1 in performance either. It's designed to compete with Pentium Silver, right? Which is which is like Celeron level, what we used to call Celeron level, very low power, low wattage type of draw chip. Lenovo has the Yoga that uses the Qualcomm 8CX. Which was originally launched in 2020, and it was refreshed last year in February 2021. Now, I thought that maybe they might come out with one in February of this year, but if you look at Lenovo's CES announcements, which was just a couple weeks ago, there's no ARM version of the Yoga announced for 2022. It's an Intel Evo chip and AMD Ryzen, right? So I'm thinking sales were lousy on the ARM Yoga, and they're just going to go with Intel's low-power, energy-efficient Evo chip because the x86 is a proven architecture and performance and proven sales history. So Dell is also going with Evo, and HP's mainstream low-power notebooks are 11 and 12th generation Evo. So it's not looking good in terms of near future for ARM on PCs.
Yeah, there has to be a reason for that, right?
Yeah, and the bottom line is the 12th Gen Evo, which was just announced a couple of weeks ago at CES, is good enough.
Yeah.
Right? It's not the powerhouse that M1 is, not even close. It's probably not even the powerhouse that what's in your iPhone. It's probably not even as powerful as an A14, but it delivers good enough performance in terms of CPU and energy consumption with its advertised 9 hours of real-world battery life with a full HD display that most mainstream business users that are going to want a laptop or a mobile solution is going to be happy with that, in theory, right? So like Apple Silicon, Evo is a system on a chip, an SoC platform, that's got Wi-Fi 6 built into it, a GPU with between a 35 and 45 watt total system footprint, right? So everything in the box, in your laptop, up to 45 watt system draw as a maximum. So to level set, this is a laptop roughly comparable to a very low end M1 MacBook Air, like the 2021, not even the current generation one, right? In terms of functionality, but the chips are nowhere near as powerful as even that chip, right? So the MacBook Air M1 has about a 15 hour battery life, right? And its wattage draw will scale between 18 watts at the lower end and 110 watts at the high end.
Which is crazy. That's a crazy range.
Depending on the load, right? So like if you're really crunching video in Final Cut or something, or playing a 3D game that has a million different resources and assets in it, right? Maybe you're going to crunch, you know, 100, 110 watts. Right, yeah. But that's not normal operation. Your normal operation is probably going to be between 30 and 40, or something like that. You know, we should probably also mention that the new AMD Ryzen 6000 platform for laptops is also a system on a chip platform that's getting a lot of attention from PC manufacturers now. So it doesn't look like the x86 is going anywhere on the PC for a while, really.
Yeah, no, it can't. And those AMD Ryzen 6000 chips, I had a briefing with AMD after CES, and man, they're talking those chips up quite a bit. They're very excited to see what those do.
If I had to buy a Windows box, I would get a Ryzen for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that this whole conversation is started based on NVIDIA walking away from purchasing ARM, which, by the way, walking away from the sale is going to cost NVIDIA $2 billion. They had already paid this to ARM. This was their breakup fee / whatever, according to the Bloomberg report that came out this week. Now, to be clear, NVIDIA hasn't announced it's walking away. These are rumors. Bloomberg says it has sources within the company that they're preparing everything they can to walk away from this purchase. So I guess what does it mean going forward, Perlo, for NVIDIA and ARM?
So NVIDIA, you know, is a chip maker, right? So they make GPUs. They also make CPU, SoCs. They make ARM SoCs, but they are a licensor of their architectural licensor of the technology, just as Qualcomm and Samsung and Apple is, and Microsoft is, right? I mean, ARM has a long list of architectural licensees, right, that are allowed to produce systems using their chip architecture designs. They call them chip primitives, is what they call them. The basic blueprints for how to make a core, a licensed core design, like A15 core or something like that. So had NVIDIA, NVIDIA, we both pronounce it slightly differently. Had NVIDIA had been able to complete this purchase, right, and they would have been valued at this point probably closer to $75 billion rather than $40 billion, based on the stock value. I mean, at this point, what we're hearing is rumors from Bloomberg as a report, but very clear signals being sent by the FTC that this should not be allowed to go through. So I think it's safe to say it's dead, right?
Yeah.
They would have been able to drive the future of the ARM architecture, including the core designs, and negotiate all the licensing with the Apples, the Qualcomms, and the Samsungs, you know, that those companies would have licensed. It would have given them an edge in their own chip designs to be able to create chips that eventually would have caught up to Apple Silicon, no question. They would have caught up, you know, within a few years. So NVIDIA now has to go do this without these benefits, right? So in lieu of this acquisition, it looks like SoftBank, who owns ARM, wants to make it a public company with an IPO. But again, Arm is without a large silicon manufacturer behind it. It's just still a company that licenses technology, right? So again, from a practical perspective, the only game in town right now is Apple. Is Qualcomm going to make progress? Sure. But the Qualcomm is a company that has its hands in a lot of different vertical industries and businesses. It's not, I mean, your average person probably sees it as the chip inside their Android, but it is a hugely profitable company in the embedded and wireless space in terms of the number of products and industries and things that they make stuff for, right? It doesn't actually need to make desktop chips to be a hugely profitable company.
No.
And you could say the same thing about Samsung Semiconductor, right? Which is a $50 billion a year business plus on its own, separate from Samsung as its parent company. That company makes a massive amount of money minting chips for other companies. And although it has its own design for smartphones and whatever, it's doing business with companies like Google and making the smartphone chips also for Qualcomm and, yes, also Apple as well. So that home ARM ecosystem does not need to make desktop systems to, you know. I mean, Microsoft wants this. They want it badly. They want the energy. The whole point is not so much that x86 isn't powerful enough, but it's power per watt.
Right.
That's the name of the game. Yeah.
We've seen with the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air, I mean, you said 15 hours of battery life for the MacBook Air M1, and the MacBook Pros are closer to 20 hours
probably
of battery life. And that's not just enough. So like you can give numbers all day long, and laptop manufacturers do this. I review gaming laptops for IGN, and I have yet to see a battery estimate for a Windows laptop be anywhere close to accurate, right? Because they're under very specific, very ideal conditions that they get that number. And so most of the time, if it's a 9-hour quoted battery life, you're lucky if you get 4.5 hours. You're probably closer to 2 to 3 hours. Apple came out and said, all right, the new MacBooks that run Apple Silicon, here's the battery life. And then you test them and they really have that battery life, if not go past the quote. And it's just so... ARM is incredibly efficient at, its processing per watt power. And it just, that's a huge benefit for anyone who is using a laptop. And we didn't even touch on the fact that this also allows for direct modem integrations for 4G and 5G. Yeah. The Surface Pro X I have has LTE built right into it. If I put a SIM card in it, it works. You know, I would love a MacBook Pro that has 5G in it. We've yet to see one of those. We have iPads and other stuff. There's nothing stopping Apple from adding a modem now other than finding the space inside the housing in order to fit it.
Yeah, and Apple clearly has been posting jobs for modem design and things like that.
It's coming, 100%.
Right now they license it from Qualcomm, their modems, but in the iPhone and such. But they are for sure designing their own modem. No question. Yeah, so, and if they can design their own modem, then they can put it inside their own chip. That's just the next logical thing for them to do. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Right. All right, Perlo, any closing thoughts about NVIDIA walking away from ARM?
I think it's a shame. Honestly, I'm not surprised that this happened. Right. I was when they announced it a good year. I think it's in 2020. They announced their intent to purchase to end of 2020. I was like, this isn't gonna fly with regulators in all these countries, you know. And I'm sure Intel has breathing a slight sigh of relief that they don't have this other company to compete with. Apple, I'm sure, is even slighter than that because they kind of don't care. They live in their own universe and they're incredibly successful. Look, I do think ARM is the future. Non-x86 is the future. There are other chips out there that designs that are out there that have tremendous potential going forward. Just a disclosure: I work for the organization that holds the open source intellectual property for RISC-V, which is an open source chip platform that a lot of companies like Western Digital are using, for example, to make, you know, microcontroller chips for like hard drives and stuff. You know, it's not at the point really yet where you can, I mean, there've been demonstration smartphones platforms made to show that, yeah, you can run Android on it. But it's nowhere near desktop speed capability yet. But I think, you know, with 5, 6, 7, 8 years of development, it very well is going to get there. And, you know, the future isn't open source hardware. So I think, you know, for now, Apple's got the lead. You know, Microsoft is going to continue to invest money in ARM and Surface Pro X. They're going to continue to iterate it. Is it going to take 2 years? Is it going to take 5 years? Is it going to take 7 years for Microsoft to get there? I don't know. But it's very clear that they are interested in the virtual desktop game on Azure, in which case you don't need a very powerful system on the other end of the line to run the desktop, right? I mean, you and I, right, you could go make something that runs on an ARM on a smartphone, you know, Raspberry Pi type of a box that connects to your monitor with a keyboard and mouse. And if you have the right bandwidth, you can run all your whole entire desktop in the cloud. And it's clear they're spending a lot of money on that. So that may be the path forward for business. Not necessarily mobile, but that may be the path forward for desktop business is virtual. You know, just like we have a subscription to Microsoft 365 for the Office suite today, there may be a subscription to Microsoft, you know, cloud Microsoft everything, including your desktop, in the future. That, I mean, as long as, and once they populate those data centers, you know, ultra dense server hardware, and they can get the cost per year down to less than what it costs for a business to buy a PC and support it remotely with remote IT support, which is an issue now that we're all sitting at home, right? If your PC support guy cannot visit the remote location to fix something, what do? You got to send your laptop back. It's got to get re-imaged by somebody and then fixed. It's much, much easier to send out something like a little thing that plugs into a monitor, and you turn it on, and everything is provisioned remotely at the data center, right? I mean, that's assuming we're all going to stay, we'll still stay at home as home office workers and not going back to the office, right? But even so, even at an office, that it would make sense, because you just don't need as many IT support staff to go running out to desks, you know, which is an expensive activity. So yeah, I think there are changes in the desktop going forward, absolutely, for the PC. It just may not be the way that we think that it's going to go forward, that we thought it was going to go forward with ARM necessarily. Yeah.
I don't think the deal falling apart is going to impact the overall transition, at least from the Windows side. It was always going to be a slow rollout, slow play there. And regardless of whether ARM is an IPO public company or owned by a larger company, that transition was always going to take time. And I really liked your comparison to Tesla and the EV market.
It's exactly like it, Matt.
Everyone sat around saying when Tesla would announce something, and it's been slower than they often announce it. But everyone, as in car manufacturers, competitors, have said that's not possible. You can't do that. It doesn't work like that. You don't know what you're doing. And that same kind of conversation surrounded Apple before the announcement of Apple Silicon, and actually during the announcement of Apple Silicon, and before anyone actually had their hands on devices in order to test it and make sure apps worked and all of that stuff. And so there's a lot of parallels there. Apple's way ahead of the rest of the PC industry when it comes to the transition to ARM. And it was because everyone sat around saying that can't be done. And so now everyone has to catch up. Microsoft has to catch up, Qualcomm, you know, all of them. So I think it's going to be a slow process. To me, there's no doubt in my mind it is the future, just like EVs are the future in my mind. But it's going to be a while before we see Microsoft, who has to, at the end of the day, forget HP, Qualcomm, Samsung. This is all in Microsoft's hands because it comes down to the operating system that runs on these chips. And they control that, and they control the emulation, and they control transitioning the apps over to be able to work on these processors. So this is a Microsoft problem, not an ARM problem. And once they, which they're very slow at it, as we've seen, I've had the Surface Pro X for almost 2 years, I bet. And, you know, it's basically, it's a little better, but it's not perfect. And Apple came out on day one with a nearly perfect transition, which is just insane. So, yeah, it's going to be a very slow roll.
I'm still blown away by it because I didn't think it was going to be possible for them to do
it. Me and you, I think we were recording a show saying, you know, there's going to be issues. There's going to be hiccups. Apps aren't going to work. Don't upgrade. I even wrote an article saying that much. Wait, because you need to wait for apps to, you know, transition. Day one, I mean, I had it early. I reviewed it under embargo. I had it 2 weeks early. And day one, Jason, everything worked.
So I have this M1 Max MacBook Pro 14 sitting on my desk. And the way that I transitioned over, I literally took my Time Machine backup hard drive. I plugged it in. It said, "Do you want me to restore all this junk?" Yep. I said, "Yes." Rebooted the machine. There was one or two apps I had to swap out and reinstall them because of a Rosetta issue or whatever. But once I did that, my desktop looks exactly as it did with my Intel machine. Exactly. Everything runs exactly.
Yeah.
All my data moved over. No pain with any of that.
Crazy, and huh?
I've had Windows transition upgrades much more painful than this.
Yeah, and your issue with having to replace a couple apps, I think any Time Machine restoration, I've had one or two apps that just their licenses don't provision right or whatever it is, and so you have to reinstall them. But that's a normal thing when you restore from a Time Machine backup, in my experience, M1, Apple Silicon or not.
Yeah.
All right, Perlo, it was fun talking with you today about semiconductors, which you would think was a very boring topic, but actually this was quite a bit of fun.
Yeah.
A good conversation. If you guys have any thoughts, make sure to reach out to us. You can find our work on ZDNet.com or both of us on Twitter. Anything else you want to say, Perlo?
No, I mean, it is kind of a bummer. I was kind of looking forward to some fast ARM Windows machines in the next few years coming from NVIDIA. But you never know. I mean, Qualcomm could pull a rabbit out of a hat. It's certainly possible. I know they're spending a lot of money on this stuff. So,
sure.
I mean, you never know. We could see a breakthrough, maybe. But
all right. I'm Jason Cipriani.
And I'm Jason Perlo.
And this is Jason Squared. Make sure to check out more of our work at ZDNet.com. And thanks for listening.